Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Here's your chance to spend Mother's Day with the King as Elvis tribute artist Wayne Ulis comes to South Creek High School in Robertsonville for Mother's Day with the King, Saturday night, May 7th, 7:30. Tickets only $15 in advance, $20 the day of the show. For tickets, go to www.innovativeticketing.com and search for Mother's Day with the King, or get your tickets at Porky's Backyard Barbecue, Williamston. For more information, call 252-290-0375. This is your chance to celebrate a great night of Elvis memories. Mother's Day with the King, Saturday night, May 7th, South Creek High School, Robertsonville.
Guys, Wayne here. I'm excited to tell you about a show that I've got coming up next weekend, Saturday, May 7th. I'll be appearing in Robertsonville, North Carolina at South Creek High School. It's Mother's Day with the King. Get your tickets at innovativeticketing.com. Tickets are $15 in advance, $20 a night of the show. I hope to see you there. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome to a very special edition of the Sports Objective, as we have a great show that, you know, we love to talk about East Carolina and sports. In fact, we'll have a special roundtable coming up towards the end of the show. But first, we are so excited. We have a big show on Saturday night at South Creek High School. And if you know anything about me, one of the number one, my favorite entertainer of all time is Elvis Presley. And we have a special Elvis tribute artist that's coming in, Wayne Ulis. And he's actually with us tonight. Wayne, thank you so much for being on the show. It means a lot, man.
Hey, Dave. Glad to be here, man.
No doubt about it. Bubba Rosenbaum, myself, and we're not the only Elvis fans out there, thankfully, because we want to sell a lot of tickets. And right, you were nice enough. We talked on the phone a few months ago, and we were going to do Valentine's Day. But with COVID, we had to push it back to Mother's Day. But I think it's all worked out nicely. And you guys may know some people in the western part of the state, like Bubba, may know Wayne. But he's actually, we're bringing him to east of I-95, the interstate there. And we're going to bring him in Eastern North Carolina to Robertsonville. We're so excited to have you. And Wayne, I know you, how long have you been performing, by the way, as an Elvis tribute artist?
Well, you know, I played around with it a long time growing up and everything. And my mom, you know, of course, was a big Elvis fan, had a big influence on me, you know, learning about Elvis's music. And it's funny, I've told people, you know, when I was actually starting to learn a lot of his songs, you know, and, you know, memorizing the lyrics and all, you know, a lot of the songs came real easy to me. And I started thinking back, well, you know, my mom was playing those records when I was a kid. So that she had a big influence on me doing what I'm doing now. But I've been performing professionally about 15 years now.
And that's wonderful, because if you're like me and you love Elvis, those of us, I was 4 when Elvis died. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see Elvis. In fact, my uncle, I know there are a lot of people that could definitely talk about it, but 77, my uncle and aunt had tickets for Fayetteville. Wow. 1 month after he passed away. And unfortunately, they didn't get a chance. They were obviously huge. Everybody in my family, I don't know anybody that I can think of in my family that are not Elvis fans. So, yeah. We've lost, of course, my grandparents and my uncles. But a lot of my family has been Elvis fans for as long as I remember. And I know that we have a lot of people that are watching tonight and maybe listening when we put this out as a podcast. But how can you not like the King? I just can't imagine anybody out there not liking the King of Rock and Roll.
Well, you know, his music's timeless. For me, it is anyway, you know. And you know, I always share when I perform, you know, there's never going to be another Elvis Presley. I mean, you know, I consider myself a tribute artist, but I'm all about keeping Elvis's memory and music alive. That's what it's all about for me.
And Wayne, my love of Elvis, you know, goes back to my childhood because of, you know, my grandmother, my dad's mom. She was a huge Elvis fan, you know, had tons of albums, you know, the old 8-track, etc. She had so many Elvis things, as well as in addition to, you know, copies of his music. She had other Elvis, I guess, paraphernalia and so forth. But so that was a lot of fun back in the mid-90s when East Carolina was playing in a Liberty Bowl. I can't remember if it was the year we played Illinois or Stanford, but it was either 94 or 95. We went to Graceland, and that was a lot of fun. I know it's changed a lot since then, as we were talking about in the green room before the show, and I'll let you touch on that here in a moment. Sure. About how it's changed over the last 25-plus years. But in addition to that, when East Carolina went to the Liberty Bowl, it was either, I think it was the 2009 season when we played Arkansas. On the way back after the game, and we stopped in Tupelo and checked out some of the things there.
Right, right. Yeah, that's Elvis's birthplace. You know, we were there just about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was actually my first stop there. And we went to the hardware store, supposedly where he had bought his first guitar when his mom bought him when he was a kid. But we saw the birthplace, the home, you know, and it's if you've not seen that, it's quite interesting. It's like it was, they call it a shotgun house. And it is it has a rear door and a front door in the same place. And literally there was no air conditioning or anything. So they would just open the doors and the air would go through the house. But he came from, Elvis came from very humble beginnings really did. Amazing to visit that and see his birthplace. But yeah, you were mentioning, Graceland in Memphis. You know, it's so different now. Now the house is the same, you know, they haven't really changed the house. It's like a time capsule, you know, you walk in there and everything looks like it did in the 70s, which is pretty cool. But across the street now, for people that have been to Graceland, have not been in recent years, you know, they tore down the strip shopping centers over there. And now they built a new 200,000 square foot exhibition center that houses everything you can imagine. I mean, you can literally spend just about a whole day across the street. Just looking at, you know, they say Elvis's dad, Vernon, was a pack rat. And a lot of people would say a hoarder today. But his dad supposedly never threw anything away. He kept like every receipt for everything Elvis ever did. And supposedly there are warehouses in the Memphis area that are just jam packed full of stuff. So they were able to actually show a lot more. One little story I like to share, and some of you guys may have heard this story, but there was a story going around a lot of years ago that Elvis was looking at TV one night in his TV room, and he for some reason or another, didn't particularly like the singer Robert Goulet. Have you heard this story, David?
I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah, I think so.
So anyway, the story goes, Robert Goulet came on TV and Elvis didn't care for him. And I think it had something to do with a meeting with Priscilla one time or another. And maybe he flirted with Priscilla or something. I don't know. But anyway, so the rumor was that Elvis saw Robert Goulet on TV and took a gun out and shot the TV out in his TV room. So I heard that for years. And I said, I don't know whether that's for real or not. So anyway, I'm across the street. The last time I'm at Graceland, and there's an area over there where they've got all this kind of personal effects and things that came out of the house. And I'm walking down through there, and here's like a 19-inch TV with a bullet hole in the front of it. So his dad didn't even throw that TV away. They still got that too. So
wow,
pretty cool to see that, though.
No doubt about it. I can't wait for those who know how much I love Elvis.
Right.
We got to make the trip, and the kids, I know that you have two new Elvis fans that are coming on Saturday night, and that would be Mackenzie, who is 8, and Alexander, there's 9. And they're going to be there. They're going to, in fact, Mackenzie told you her two favorites right now of Elvis that she knows, Hound Dog and Teddy Bear.
Right, right.
So it should be a lot of fun. In fact, want to remind fans, come on out. 7:30 is the show. Good news is our good friends at Porky's Backyard Barbecue. If you haven't got your tickets, they'll have them. They'll be selling them even on Saturday during the day if you want to go by there and get your tickets. But or you can simply go to innovativeticketing.com and just search Mother's Day with the King. And I tell you what, folks, we're excited, Wayne. I believe you told me, I believe I'm going to put you on the spot. It's a two-hour show, right?
Yeah, about 2 hours, yeah. And you know, I cover, you know, all three eras, you know, of Elvis's music. You know, we'll obviously do a lot of the big hits from the 50s, some of the stuff from the 60s and 70s, of course. I like to, you know, do maybe a gospel song or two. Elvis loved gospel music, was such a big part of his life. And so we generally try to do one or two of those. And then the movie songs, too, you know, his movie career, you know, lasted so many years, so many great feature films, you know. And so we usually do a couple of songs from the movies. But, yeah, we'll cover a lot of his different music.
Not to get off on a tangent, Dave, but you know, since Wayne brought up Elvis' humble beginnings there in Tupelo, I've watched several videos here recently, you know, talking about Elvis's twin brother. So that's pretty crazy. It would have been very interesting to see how that would have potentially changed things, you know, and, you know, what Elvis became had his twin brother lived.
Yeah, it would have been interesting. I mean, Jesse Garin was his name, and I guess he was stillborn.
Correct.
Elvis claimed, I know, you know, when he was still alive, you know, he always talked about it. he still felt even that connection to his brother that he never knew. So just like he did his mom, he was really close to his mother, you know. And of course, he lost her at a relatively young age, and that was really devastating for him when that happened.
No question about it. Our good friend Alan Vecht, who actually made the commercial that we played at the beginning, he said, looking forward to your show, Wayne. I've been a lifelong Elvis-ologist. I own everything he ever recorded, quite a few of the FTD releases over the last 20 years. Thank you for keeping the music alive.
Well, you're welcome, Alan. We hope to see you at the show. I look forward to meeting you, and thank you for that.
Yeah, he's been a dear friend since 1996. He's put up with me longer than Bubba has. Bubba probably feels like it's 1996. That we've been friends, but we had, but Alan and I just go back and forth talking about Elvis. And I tell you, I'll give Alan Vecht credit. When I first met him, I knew a little bit of the 70s Elvis. And I told you this, I think a conversation or two ago, Wayne, but I've actually, as the years have gone by, the more I appreciate the late Elvis, the 70s Elvis. When I was a kid, like my kids now, I was diehard 50s only Elvis. Except for a few songs, maybe of the 60s, a few of the 70s. Mm-hmm. But as time has gone on, I've really, thanks to Alan Vecht, I really gave the 70s Elvis a chance.
Well, you know, his voice changed, you know, a lot. If you listen to him in the 50s, he had a much higher voice, and his voice matured in the 70s. And that was when he did a lot of the ballads and, you know, he didn't get a lot, you know. You and I think you and I may have had this discussion, or when I was talking with Bill with the radio interview, you know, he didn't get a lot of good material in the 70s. You know, after his last number one hit, which was Suspicious Minds, you know, he had Burning Love went to number two in 1972. And a little interesting side story about Burning Love, it made it all the way to number two. And it didn't make it to number one because of Chuck Berry's My Ding-a-Ling. Hey, that's a true story. That.
I did not know that. I know that was. I know they were both from 1972, yep. But I didn't make the.
Yeah, but he. But no, he didn't. I think part of the problem was that, you know, and I don't try to disparage his manager, Colonel Parker. He made a lot of good decisions in Elvis's career, but I think he kind of held Elvis back somewhat. Elvis wanted to obviously tour Europe and perform over there. He would have been huge in England, Japan, all over Europe. And it's not commonly known that his manager was actually a Dutch immigrant who slipped into the U.S. after World War II. So he wasn't a U.S. citizen. And I guess he wanted to keep a tight reins on Elvis. So that's one of the reasons he didn't want Elvis to travel abroad and perform, because he wouldn't have been able to kind of, he wouldn't have been able to be close to him if he allowed him to do that. But anyway, yeah.
That another thing people may not know is he was supposed to be the one with Barbara Streisand in A Star Is Born, but Colonel Parker turned that down. And I thought that was crazy, because if you think about that time period, that would have been, well, who knows? I mean, I could, it's speculation because he didn't do it, mm-hmm. but man, that would have been, I really believe that would have been really, really big for Elvis. I mean, that was such a great, it's such a great story, such a great film. Even the latest version with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga
had the acting experience. I mean, you know, a lot of people, you know, didn't care for some of his, you know, teeny bopper movies, you know, later in the mid late 60s, you know, but he had some, I think he had some great, great movies. Of course, his favorite, Elvis's favorite, acting role was in King Creole. And, which I think he did a phenomenal job in that, but, you had a young Walter Matthau was actually in that movie, King Creole. And Elvis did a great job acting in that movie.
Yeah, not every, and let's be fair, not every movie is going to be your best. That's not every movie is going to be great. Yeah. So I give him, there's movies that I really like from him, and movies I'm like, wow, but it's still Elvis, so you got to love it. But let's, Alan Vick had another great point added to what you were saying. Elvis management wanted half the publishing if he recorded your songs, so that kept a lot of people from pitching their best material to the Presley organization.
Yeah, so you're right. In the 70s, the great songwriters just weren't bringing, they really weren't bringing any new material to Elvis. But what he did, which I think was phenomenal, he started recording a lot of the old country songs, you know, and doing remakes of some of the older country songs from the 50s and 60s. And he came out with some great stuff, country albums. And a lot of people don't know this, you know, David, I'm sure you're aware of this, but, you know, Elvis is the only artist in history that's been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Country Music Hall of Fame, and Gospel Music Hall of Fame.
That's right. He is. It's amazing how many he, and I know that Johnny Cash is in a lot of Hall of Fames too, but he's definitely the first artist that I really loved. And maybe that's sentimentally why I love him so much. But the very first, I'll tell this quick story and we'll move on about you. But the very first record I ever played on those, you know, those turntables or those, there was more like a piece of furniture, the stereos back in the day, back in the 70s.
Big console type.
Yeah, big consoles.
Right.
Well, when I was probably 4, maybe 5, right after Elvis died, I was tall enough to be able to see over that where I could actually see the turntable inside that console. And the Elvis Golden Hits was the very first album that I ever played on my own. Right. So that's another thing. Not that people probably care, but just telling you how big a fan I am. As far as the show on Saturday night, it's going to be a lot of fun. Our good friend Backyard Barbecue, one of our Mind fans, we're actually opening the doors a lot sooner than we normally would. So it gives you a chance to come out. You'll have a place to eat. You have a great chance to eat. And then for Mother's Day, if you have your mom is still alive or your, there's a lot of, Wayne, there's a lot of Elvis fan, older ladies that are coming and look out. So I just want to give you fair warning.
That's great. You know, we look forward to meeting everybody.
No doubt about it. I know, Bubba, we're going to have a chance for everybody if you want to come on out. And I know that you actually give a chance to meet all the fans afterwards, right?
Yeah. You know, what I like to do afterwards, you know, I do give out some, I have a lady down in Charlotte that makes custom-made silk scarves for me. So what I will do is I will go out in the audience during the show and just randomly give out some scarves. And I always like to invite, you know, anyone who wants to come up and say hello after the show, obviously. But I always invite the ladies to bring their scarf up, you know, after the show. And we'll go out in the lobby or wherever. And, you know, I like to personalize those and sign those for folks that are there. And I'm happy to take, you know, pictures with anybody that wants to do that. And, but yeah, we definitely like to meet folks after the show.
Like our good friend Alan Vick, who's been joining us tonight. He's I tell you what, if he's a walking encyclopedia when it comes to Elvis. It's amazing to sit back. We were together Friday night last week. He's so excited about the show, and we were talking about the different eras and that sort of thing. But When it comes to Elvis, is there are there songs that are more challenging for you to do? I mean, by the way, before you answer, I don't believe how good Wayne is, then check him out on YouTube. Unbelievable stuff he's done. And that we, Alan and I were talking about how great you were last Friday night.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I worked at the craft for a long time, and you know, it's just sitting here kind of talking with you guys, it's fun. But you know, when you're doing a show, you know, you're obviously, again, not Elvis, but you're trying to recreate, you know, the image on stage, you know, the stage presence and everything. And I mean, it's a lot involved in, you know, because nobody's ever going to be as good as Elvis was, you know, let's just go ahead and say that. But I appreciate the compliment, and I enjoy doing it. I really do.
Before I forget too, we were talking about today, and I want to say this on our show. I know I'll forget, and afterwards I'm like, why didn't I mention that, plug that for him? I want you to talk about the Mayberry Cruise, because there's a lot of Andy Griffith fans, and I know you do a good job with that.
Right.
And I believe your wife is a travel agent, so I want to make sure we plug your cruise coming up, because there are a lot of people right now, maybe they can't make Saturday night. We hope you can, but we'd love for you to go on the cruise with Wayne.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing, to be honest with you, my wife and I just have always been just huge fans of the Andy Griffith Show. I mean, it just, you know, when you've had a bad day or things are bothering you with your job or whatever, you can always go home and put on Andy Griffith, you know, and it's like it takes you to a place, you know, a place that is a happy place, you know. So we just have been big fans forever. And my wife has been in the travel business for 30 some odd years. But about 15, 16 years ago, she came up with the idea to do a Mayberry cruise and a theme cruise, and have try to get some former cast members from the show, tribute artists that perform at Mayberry Days in Mount Airy every year. So we went and approached, you know, certain people about doing that. And it all started about 15, 16 years ago. Well, we've had several cast members have been on the show with us, on the cruise with us. And it's a lot of fun. You know, this year we're actually going to have Clint Howard, who is Ron's little brother. And if you remember, everybody remembers him from Andy Griffith. He was a little kid in the cowboy outfit with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You know, he never had any speaking lines or anything. But then, of course, Clint went on and had a real successful career. Some of you may remember him from the TV series Gentle Ben, and he was on that. But he, super nice guy. We'll have him on the cruise. He'll do a Q&A, sign autographs. We'll watch some video clips of different things he's done. We do a variety show where we recreate scenes from the show. We'll have several different tribute artists that will do that. And then there's a Mayberry trivia contest, a lot of stuff. It's a lot of fun. And if you're interested in that, you can call All About Cruises Incorporated at 336-538-4926 and speak to Sharon. That's my wife. And we'd love to have you join us. We have a pretty good crowd, goes every year. And this will be the first one we've done in 2 years because of COVID. So we're real excited. And the dates are, it actually leaves this year on October 23rd out of Miami. And it's a 6-night cruise that we're going to be going down to the Caribbean.
Hey, Bubba, I was going to say to you real quick, and I'll pitch it to you. Maybe my mom and dad can go on that cruise. I know they would love it. We'll take care of all the kids, well, grandkids, I should say, and they can go on the cruise and have a good time with Wayne.
Oh, and actually, I forgot to mention, I actually do an Elvis show as part of the Mayberry cruise. So I left that out.
Yeah, Dave, I'm sure your parents would love that. And, Wayne, we talked about a lot of Elvis's songs and so forth. But, you know, what are some of your favorite, you know, to listen to sing, and you know, which are your favorites?
You know, I like so many. You know, and people ask me all the time, "What's your favorite?" You know, and you know, I probably, if I had to pick one, it probably be Suspicious Minds, which was his last number one in 1969. But I like a lot of the ballads in the ghetto. Kentucky Rain's one of my favorites. A lot of the early stuff too, you know, Heartbreak Hotel was, of course, his first number one hit. And interestingly, if you go on my Facebook page and look down, you'll see some photos that were recently discovered over in Burlington, North Carolina, which is where I'm originally from, that a gentleman found where Elvis came through Burlington back in 1956. And he actually performed at Williams High School Auditorium. And they found photos of that, and I posted them on my Facebook page a couple months ago, and it was crazy. It just exploded. People that were and had been to that show and actually had not seen actual pictures from that. And but he performed there in, I don't remember what month it was, but it was in 1956, and it was right before he signed his contract with RCA. And then, of course, Heartbreak Hotel came out, and then, of course, the rest of it was history. We know so.
And those of you having to get a chance, you need to go to the RCA Studio B in Nashville. And actually, it's amazing. If you get a chance, it's, you know, you go to the Country Music Hall of Fame, by the way, if you're wondering how to do that. And I believe they have a tour where you can go over there. They did at one time, but it's amazing. They have a list of all the songs that have been recorded there. And it's just amazing, from Elvis to Dolly Parton. You could go on and on and on. All the famous songs that when you read them, you're just amazed at how much history is there. We were talking about Sun Records, you know, in Memphis. But there's so many great things, great songs, great memories. Just when you're in that room, I've been there, it's like you feel overwhelmed. You can't really even imagine how many great songs are recorded there. And when you start thinking about it, it can be a little much.
I haven't been there, David. I'm actually, last time we went to Memphis, we stopped in Nashville, and I tried to buy the tour just for the Studio B, but you can't buy it as a separate tour. You have to buy the Country Music Hall of Fame, and it comes as part of it. But, yeah, I definitely want to see that. That's one thing on my bucket list, but that's actually, you know, where Elvis recorded How Great Thou Art. In that studio, which of course he won two Grammys for. So yeah, I definitely want to see that.
No doubt. In fact, I love the Bill Gaither song, He Touched Me.
Oh yeah.
Elvis, one of my favorites. But that whole gospel album, that first one that he did, I believe it was the first one, but he was just amazing on that. You could tell, the thing I love about Elvis, we can move on again about the show one more time, but the thing I love about Elvis so much is all the different influences. He wasn't one of those guys that had one style of music he liked. He liked an eclectic taste.
He did.
And I think most people do. But how he could take all those different influences and make it his own, because right. People always talk about how he ripped off, you know, the some of the early music from pioneers from African-American music. But I thought, well, at that particular time, he was taking what he liked, and he put that he made that music that that at that time period, being a rock and roll pioneer, right. He brought that music to light.
Well, actually, you know, the people that wrote those songs that he re-recorded, I'm sure they made money off that. One little story I like to share is Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes. Carl was well known as for saying, you know, I wrote that song, I had a hit with it, but I made more money off of Elvis singing it than I did singing it myself. So, you know, yeah.
No question about it. We're going to have so much fun with you Saturday night. I know we've kept you longer than expected, but we appreciate it very much. We want people to get tickets. And I tell you what, it's going to be a great show. My kids are very excited about it. And we talked about that before, how the kids of all ages love Elvis. Some people are going to be in their 70s, 80s there on Saturday night. And then we've got my kids that are 8 and 9 years old, and they love Elvis. So it's going to be a huge range of, I guess, from 8 to 80, right, Wayne?
Yeah, well, you know, you and I were talking earlier today, you know, and I mean, I love all the fans, obviously, but the little kids, you know, it's really special, you know, that to see little kids that are interested in that music, you know, and for the most part, most of the young ones that I meet are into the 50s stuff. You know, they like Heartbreak Hotel and Hound Dog and Blue Suede. They like the 50s stuff, which is great. But I love seeing the little kids, you know, coming along now. They're going to keep this thing going, hopefully, you know, for quite a few years. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
No doubt about it. Wayne, I want to remind people to get your tickets. You can get them in advance. If you're watching this, it's Thursday night. We'll have live, but we also have up until Saturday, they'll have tickets at Porky's Backyard Barbecue. We have printed tickets. Those of you that are old dogs who haven't learned new tricks, we have printed tickets for you in advance. But on Saturday, keep in mind, they'll be $20.
Right.
So make sure that you get them tomorrow, being Friday. But Saturday, they go up to $20 the day of the show. You can obviously come by, and we'll be the doors open, and we'll get those tickets for you there. But keep in mind, the day of the show, and there at the actual door, they'll be $20. Or you can simply go to innovativeticketing.com and just search for Mother's Day with the King. Wayne, it's such a huge honor to have you coming to. It's almost like having Elvis come to Robertsonville. They're the people that Robertsonville, I think, has 1,800 or 1,900 people. So they're tickled to death. There are a lot of people in Robertsonville that are excited that we're bringing something to Robertsonville. It's not every day that that happens, but they're very excited about it. And we're very excited. And I'm glad to have a new friend in Wayne Euless. So I appreciate you very much for coming on the show, and look forward to the show on Saturday night.
Thank you, David. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, I hope you have a great night. We'll see you there Saturday. And fans, hopefully they'll come out and enjoy it. And thank you tonight, my friend.
Okay, buddy. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. We appreciate Wayne so much, as he's going to be. And that's going to be a great show, Bubba. I'll tell you what, Wayne is a good friend, and we appreciate him. Again, Saturday night, get your tickets at innovativeticketing.com and just simply click on search for Mother's Day with the King. Tickets are $15 now. In advance, day of show, $20. So we want you to come on. And thanks, Wayne, so much for coming on tonight. It means so much. All right. So now we're going to the part of the show. In fact, I think Kyle will be coming back in our green room very soon. But we have our one of our favorite things we like to do is a round table. We don't get a chance to do it much where we have a lot of guests about ECU and sports. So we thought we'd take the second part of the show and talk about anything you want to talk about, East Carolina sports of the like. So we'd love for you to jump on board, and just like Alan Vick, our good friend, you can come on now and talk sports with ECU. It'll be a lot of fun. I know that Kyle's coming back on. Obviously Matt will be on in just a little bit. Lots to talk about, obviously, with we had one thing I want to plug. We had Mike Houston on last night. He recorded an interview with us yesterday. We put it on last night for you. If you haven't heard that interview, then check out the head football coach of East Carolina. As coach is always very candid, and we appreciate his comments on a lot of different topics. We were able to talk to him about 20 minutes, and Matt and I were asking him a lot of different things. So we tried to get – I thought we did our very best on getting a lot of different things in a short period of time for sure. Want to remind fans, too, to get your tickets now on the screen. We have it 1-800-DIAL-ECU, or you can go to ecupirates.com. And I think, Bubba, we were at Bubba, if you're here back with us now, 14,000? No, not quite 14,000 season tickets sold, right? Was it 13?
When I spoke to the ticket office, I want to say it was Monday or Tuesday, and we were right there at the 13,500 mark. Last year, I want to say we finished at 14,100. So right around 500 or 600 tickets from where we were in 2021. The athletic department has set a goal of 15,000, but I think we can definitely beat that. And hopefully we can get up there, you know, 17 or 18.
No doubt. And that's one of the things, my gosh, when you think about East Carolina, NC State alone, if you want to be able to go to that game, folks, when we get closer to that game, you're not going to be able to get a ticket. I really believe that will be a sellout. Every time East Carolina, NC State play at home and home, or the a neutral site site like a Charlotte, Bank of America, you're going to have a ton. And so we look forward to we want to make sure that we get as many people there. In fact, we have packages as low as $125. They have that 7 home games. In fact, we talked about that there's going to be every single Saturday in September will be home games. And Bubba, you can stay at my house. I don't know if your wife Stacy would like that, but you're going to have to make four straight Saturday trips to Greenville. That's crazy.
Yeah, I remember one, I want to say maybe it was Ruffin McNeil's second season, but it was, there was some time during the Holtz years or the McNeil years where the Pirates actually played five home games in a row. But nonetheless, this is very, very rare, but the Pirate Nation needs to step up. And as far as that season opener against NC State, like Coach Houston said on our podcast within the last 24 hours, he said anything less than a sellout for NC State is going to be would be disappointing, but it's not going to be disappointing because I know Pirate Nation will make it happen.
Absolutely. And I know that we'll have Kyle, maybe we'll get Matt in there here in a second. Kyle being in the green room, and we'll get him on in just a second. You know, he has to make an entrance to have Kyle on the show, but we'll get him on in just a second. If you want to comment tonight, obviously you can. If you're watching on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, then you can make your comments known, and we'll put them up there. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is. He actually has a horse in the Kentucky Derby on Saturday, Barber Road. He is actually the owner of the horse. It's Kyle Barber. How are you, man?
I wish I owned a horse in the Kentucky Derby. What's going on, guys?
I'm serious. I'm pulling for Barber Road. I'm going to be pulling hard Saturday night at 6 just for you.
Yeah, I not much of a horse racing guy. For some reason, it's one horse that always stuck with me, and I have no idea. It was a name of a horse, Lil E.T. or Lily T. or it was something like that. I don't remember exactly. Maybe if there's some horse racing expert in their audience, they'll know what I'm talking about. But that's like the only horse whose name I remember, and I don't really think it was a particularly successful horse. Just for some reason, the name stuck with me.
I just like the crazy names. I love what we're like that story about Barber Road and Kinston, and that's going to be on in literally the Kentucky Derby. That's crazy. So a lot of fun for sure. We wanted to talk, have a round table for Pirate fans. We don't get a chance to do it as much as we used to. So Kyle, we wanted to have you on and Bubba obviously, and have a show where we could spend some time talking about topics. One of the things that I know we could start off with, my friend Kyle, is that you told us on Hoist the Colors, our good friend Stephen Igo, and the message boards today, a lot of talk about our conversation yesterday. We're going to plug again with Coach Mike Houston, and particularly about the indoor practice facility, right? Can you catch me up to speed on that?
Evidently, that was kind of breaking news to people. He broke it kind of on the podcast. It's going to be released to the public next week. The details of it, which, you know, I wonder if Gilbert, that could have been one of them things where Houston did it just so Gilbert had to do it, to go ahead and get it out there to the public. But apparently $20 million is the goal. Some people think we can get it done cheaper than that. I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know how fancy they're trying to make it. Sometimes, you know, I wonder with certain things, you want it to be nice, but I mean, I don't know. I always wonder with that kind of stuff, why is it so damn expensive?
Have you seen construction costs lately?
Right. Yeah, I understand that. But, I mean, essentially, you're building, I'm assuming it's going to be, you know, I don't know how big it's going to be. It's not going to be 100 yards. I'm assuming it'll be, what are they normally, Bubba, 50 yards?
No, I think it, you know, if space will allow, I certainly think it will be 100 or right there at it because, to be honest with you, right now, App State, for comparison, and they've had one for several years as dictated by their climate, but theirs is less than 100 yards. I want to say it's maybe 70, 75.
Okay. I haven't seen many of them that are 100 yards.
They have very, very little room on the sidelines.
Right.
I do think that having an indoor practice facility that's, you know, a full, you know, 120 yards when you have the end zones, I think that's become more and more common than it used to be.
Okay. Well, and if we're going for that, I could see it being expensive. But, I mean, even if it was – I think having the rooms on the sidelines is kind of important for just functionality. But even if you did it 50 yards, I mean, you could practice all you wanted by and large. But – it'll be interesting to see how fast we get it done. That's a lot of money to be raised. I don't know where we are on paying off the tower. And Houston also talked about the importance of name, image, and likeness, NIL, and where that's going, and you know how businesses need to get involved, how there needs to be a fund set up by donors, so that we can kind of, I guess, I don't know how that works exactly if people are just donating to an NIL fund. Does anybody know how that a collective, right? But how does that work? What are they advertising? You know, they got to be doing something for the money, I thought. So is the collective going to be set up at, are they advertising the collective? I mean, I don't understand how that works. That's the NCAA doing things, you know, essentially that's just paying players. Essentially it's right. What SMU got the death penalty for. So I don't know. I really believe, not to be a Debbie Downer, and as we talk about broad, you know, spectrum of college football, I think there's going to be a huge shift coming because of this NIL crap, and I believe that there's going to be a divide coming, and I don't think all Power Five teams are going to make it. I really don't. I think it's going to be I think it's going to be interesting to see how things play out over the next 5 years or so.
Well, Matt and I were talking because we're getting ready for the show yesterday, and we knew we were going to do it. And he said he and I were talking, but I tell you what scares me, and we haven't talked about this part. The one thing that I've been thinking a lot over the last year is the very fact that the people that had their heads in the sand, we're talking about the NCAA, and I'm not going to go off on a tangent how I feel about the NCAA, but the one thing that scares me with them is all of a sudden, you know, literally this has been around. We knew this was coming. It's like a freight train. We knew it was coming. And so what's happening is my fear is all of a sudden they're going to wait a minute. You can't do that, East Carolina, or fill in the blank of the name of the school, and all of a sudden start putting sanctions on it. I don't think.
No, I mean, there's you got people that are millionaires at this point, Dave. I mean, I'm not worried about that. Not now. It would have to be rules changed. So I'm not really. That's not really clear.
They're not clear on what you can or.
Well, you basically do what you want to. I mean, it's for all intents and purposes. At this point, it's the Wild West. I mean, so the NCAA is a damn joke. You know, just like they want to suspend. I'm sorry, guys. I got my mind on so many other things. But our pitcher, Wisenhunt. They want to suspend Wisenhunt for using a supplement he bought over the counter. You know, that's per rumor. GNC per rumor. Yeah, you know, you players can be millionaires now and threaten to transfer. They don't get more money. Or you can have a homeboy in Pennsylvania at Penn who claims he's a girl and runs for swimming championships. That's allowed, but Wisenhunt can't take a GNC supplement. The NCAA is freaking retarded. It's lost all credibility when you're paying players millions of dollars, and you got a dude sitting NCAA records in a girl's sport. You've lost all credibility, and just looking at what they did to Wisenhunt and really what they did to our baseball team this year is criminal.
I agree with that 100%.
Now, guys, very quickly before we move on, kind of where I was going a few minutes ago with that regarding App State, and then also I was going to bring up NC State's indoor facility. I did double check, and NC State's facility is, you know, 450 yards of regulation football field. And where I was going with App State, the reason I brought that up is, although they've had that one that is not regulation, they're, you know, in the works of tearing that one down, probably in the very near future, and building one that is regulation.
And how much is App spending on it? You know, I'd like to know what they're spending on theirs, or should be a similar cost. I mean, I know construction costs are more in Boone than they are Greenville. So I'd love to know what they're spending, how many bells and whistles they're planning on putting in, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know, this has to be done. It's like Coach Houston said, there are schools that, you know, we perceive ourselves being above that we are behind in facilities. So it needs to be rectified, and hopefully we can get it rectified. Another issue to kind of go along with that and kind of go along with fundraising for indoor practice facility and the collective for NIL is, you know, support. Power Club membership's down. It continues to be down. Me and Bubba and Dave, particularly off the air, me and Bubba's had this conversation several times about people aging out. I mean, so many people are getting older. You know, we are the, I'm 41, Bubba's 40. Dave, you're late 40s, and we're the young crowd. And there's not that many of us. So I'd love to know how many season ticket holders are under the age of 50 and how many season ticket holders are under the age of 40 at this point. And that's something we need to adjust. We need to get younger. And that's nothing. That's not being ageist against the older Pirates. It's a fact. People get old and they're not as active anymore, and they die and they go to nursing homes or whatever. And we need to get younger desperately, or 20 years from now, we're going to look around and, you know, we're going to be talking about how we once were one of the best fan bases in college football.
Yeah, Kyle, I mean, you hear all the time coaches talk about how, I mean, you want balance in your classes, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. I mean, same thing with the age ranges as far as your donor base and then also season ticket base. You need to have a strong base at each age level, or, you know, that range of ages, so that you can carry on, you know, when people are, you know, moving on or passing on.
Yeah, and you can start now with young grad. You can really put an emphasis on that and push it hard at the Pirate Club level. You can start even with before that with the student Pirate Club. But there's a whole, you know, there's a whole group of people that were coming to games that were around our age, Bubba, that were coming to games in their 30s and 20s in the Skip Holtz era during the Ruffin McNeil era, that it's kind of left and ain't came back. And we need to get them back. We need to get them back. They got, you know, a lot of them have kids now. They're busy doing other things. But we need to get them back, and we need to get them involved. And part of that's going to take care of itself, winning on the football field. But we need them involved more than just buying season tickets. It's going to, like I said, it's going to take a collective effort. And in terms of NIL, and I talked about this with you guys jokingly, I think we should contact Vince. WWE, Vince McMahon has only been so involved with ECU over the years. But one thing Vince likes is Vince likes mainstream publicity. He likes being the top story on ESPN. And he literally, you know, Vince McMahon right now, the story of him signing NIL deals, the WWE signing NIL deals with East Carolina, his alma mater's athletes, and offering them hundreds of thousands of dollars. And now if you're an East Carolina athlete and you sign a football contract, you're a WWE, NIL, you know, whatever. How it would be all over ESPN, and he could literally, he has the, we're in a situation now, you can buy championships. Vince has got the money where you could pitch it to him. Hey, right now, you know, you could make East Carolina a top 10 football program where they're competing for national championships, because he can do it financially, and that's something, you know, that may appeal to him where you couldn't appeal to Vince in the past. And I think it's worth a shot if you can get somebody in his ear and take it from that angle of, hey, you spend your money here, it's going to get a lot of press. And when East Carolina's competing for New Year's Six bowl games, there's going to be all kinds of talks of WWE and the NIL deals with our athletes. And I'm telling you, if somebody could get in his ear and pitch it from the right angle, you may be able to get him interested in something like that. That's just because of his ego.
That's something I've said time and again, Kyle, that, you know, if you get Vince McMahon involved, he would have the opportunity to be East Carolina's T. Boone Pickens. And for folks who aren't familiar with T. Boone Pickens, he's a, you know, oil tycoon in Texas, Oklahoma State guy. And, you know, he passed away here several years back. But he did remarkable things for Oklahoma State. And no, they haven't been in the college football playoff, but they've been highly successful, much more successful, you know, since he made those contributions. And you see Their stadium there in Stillwater is absolutely beautiful, with, you know, with luxury suites and boxes and so forth around the stadium, kind of like a miniature Lambeau Field.
Yeah, oh, but if you could convince Vince now, hey, look, you pour that money into East Carolina football directly to the student athletes, and you know you got a quarterback. Let's say we'll use that because that's the most you know talked about position. You got a 4 or 5 star quarterback that's getting Power Five offers, and now all of a sudden East Carolina offers him, and the story tied to it is it becomes with an NIL deal from the WWE worth a couple million bucks. I mean, that's going to be all over ESPN.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, somebody's got to know Vince McMahon, I would think. I mean, we've had Linda McMahon. She did the commencement speech a few years ago. They gave a lot of money to the business school. That's where they graduated. So you would think that we would have to be able to get some money from Vince, I would think, from the athletic department.
I would make him tell us no. I think the NIL deal in particular is something, again, that if you pitched it to him right, he could be interested in. You know, I don't know what other, you know, multimillionaire, you know, Vince is a billionaire. I don't know what other billionaires or multimillionaires, you know, we have out there that we could have NIL deals with. You know, obviously anybody that owns businesses, obviously in Eastern North Carolina, but beyond, if you're a Pirate, could contribute. And, you know, I know Grady White, Grady White is, he's a Tar Heel, right?
I believe that's correct. Yeah,
but he's
at least, if he's not a Tar Heel, he's at least given substantially to North Carolina.
Yeah, and of course he gave a lot to us. And I'm sure, you know, maybe we could get him involved in some NIL deals. But you know, maybe he's already doing that with UNC. I don't know. But it's something that's going to need to be addressed going forward. And I don't know, college football and college athletics in general. Has changed so much, and it's going to continue to change. And with the transfer portal and now NIL deals being, you know, directly involved with transfers, it's a, I don't know, man, it's an interesting time in college athletics.
Along these same lines, Zay Jones, back during the tail end of spring practice, you know, gave a very passionate speech to the team, he and Robert, but Zay's was, you know, as some of the players and coaches said, you know, very powerful, and you know what East Carolina meant to him, and with the opportunity it provided, and he signed a very lucrative deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars back, you know, within the last couple months. I think it was maybe $8 million per year. So with his passion for East Carolina, you know, maybe in the future, there'll be something there with the passion that Zay has for the Pirates. And you know, he's been very, very blessed, and obviously his opportunity at East Carolina provided a springboard to make it to the NFL and do what he's doing there now.
Funny you say the Jacksonville Jaguars with Zay Jones. Shad Khan and Tony Khan own the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Tony Khan owns AEW, Vince's only competition, and maybe Zay can get in Tony Khan's ear and say, hey, look, Vince don't want to help. You want to upstage him? Why don't you sign NIL deals with his alma mater's athletes?
Yeah, that's totally that. Hey, whatever, within reason, obviously, but you know, $20 million. And that's the thing, is that we can sit back and everybody can lick our wounds and say, it's not fair, we don't have the money. Well, East Carolina is not North Carolina. We've never had the money, but we've always had great leadership. Every day I walk by a picture of Leo Jenkins at work. And the chancellor, president or chancellor of East Carolina from 1960 to 1978. Think about if we had no Leo Jenkins, or we had Leo Jenkins and he didn't do very much. Having a great chancellor like that, there's a med school because of him, East Carolina University. It was not UNC Greenville. He fought for that, did a lot of great things. He put us up to Division I for football, and the Pat Dyer, you could go on and on and on. But I think a lot of people, if you want to look at textbook, how to be a great leader at East Carolina, the first stop, and maybe the only stop, but the first stop certainly should be Leo Jenkins. And that's what's frustrating to me, is we don't have people right now that can go out there and make phone calls and say, okay, you need $1 million, you need $20 million, you need this amount. there's enough people out there, including what's frustrating to me, guys, and I'll just go ahead and say it. I was trying to play nice tonight, but why do we keep getting left out? I was scholarship level last year for Pirate Club, and nobody told us about an event that was held that was in secret with as far as Michael Schwartz. I mean, that's your guy, right? You got rid of Dooley. And
who got left out of an event with Mike Schwartz?
The fans did, except for the really big donors. And I'm frustrated about that because
maybe you have an event for the really big donors, and then you have an event for all Pirate Club members. You know, you need all Pirate Club members deserve to meet the new head basketball coach and have an event with him. And
yep,
and they keep doing the same old shit of excluding instead of including, and it keeps not working. You know, the Pirate Club keeps getting smaller and smaller. And I don't know. I really don't know what's going on. Some of the things, you know, you get told by certain people, Bubba, about things that go on with communications from the Pirate Club and members, and it's mind-boggling. I don't know what's going on over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole point is – I'm sorry, Bubba, go ahead.
I was piggybacking off what Kyle was saying there, you know, Knowing people, and really multiple people that have reached out, they're planning on renewing season tickets after not being on board a year ago, and they reached out to the Pirate Club and had questions regarding parking and what may be available. And if you don't have an answer at that time, then no big deal. But you know, at least pick up the phone. Say, hey, appreciate your phone call. Just wanted to let you know I got your message, and I'll be back in touch in 2 weeks or whatever. So just, you know, be upfront and first class in your communication, and let those season ticket holders, Pirate Club donors, know how important they are, because without them, those scholarships don't get funded. Town Bank Tower doesn't get paid for. Indoor practice facilities don't get built. So on and so forth.
Yeah, no, and the stands are empty. I mean, just right down to that is, you know, I don't. It's an exciting football schedule. There's a lot to sell right now. We're coming off of a bowl season, despite the bowl game not being played. You know, you open up with your arch rival NC State, who's going to be potentially in the top 10. Worst case, they'll be top 15 preseason. They're going to be talks of them winning the ACC, and you know, I'm sure some of their fans will delusionally be thinking playoff. So that's a big time opponent to open the season. You got BYU, who's going to be on the road, but you got a preseason top 20 team there, maybe top 15. You know, you got Old Dominion coming in. You know, I was thinking about this as we get into a little bit of football discussion. We don't have to take a deep dive, but I don't like that Old Dominion game, second game of the year, because if you upset NC State, you know, them being potentially top 10, you're going to be walking on damn water. And then you got to get ready for a sneaky good ODU team that, you know, won five in a row to make a bowl last year. Or if you get up, if you get beat by NC State, are you still going to have your head in the sand as ODU comes to town? I kind of wish Campbell was in between that ODU and NC State game. But the ODU game number two, is a little dangerous to me because of it being right after NC State. So either way, win or lose, we better be ready for the Monarchs.
I agree with you, Kyle. I was thinking about that yesterday, how I wish it was Campbell in week two rather than ODU. But, hey, that's one of the things that, while I no doubt agree with your point, that that would be an interesting variable if we want to be the program that we want to be, you know, winning championships and contending for them year in, year out, hopefully in the future under Coach Houston. Or other coaches, then that's something, you know, kind of like baseball, just has to learn to play with a target on its back.
Yeah, there's a human element. You go back and you look at when Virginia Tech upset Ohio State, and you know, they were number three in the country, I think, and then we came to town to Blacksburg and beat them the very next weekend. It's just there's a human element to it.
Wholeheartedly agree. Just like last year with Marshall, and then turn around after a big 17-point fourth quarter comeback. There in the last 8 to 10 minutes, you have that close call with Charleston Southern.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think if we lose to NC State, particularly them being top 10, unless it's an embarrassing blowout, I would think we would be ready to go against ODU looking for our first win of the year. But, boy, you sure would hate to upset NC State and get upset by ODU the next week. But it is what it is. The schedule kind of falls where it falls. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how good ODU is. Like I said, I do know, you know, they got destroyed in their bowl game last year, but they were playing really good going into that bowl. And they have one really good player. I don't even know what position he plays. I just know that they got one player that's I probably shouldn't even brought it up because I'm not even aware of his position, but I know he's like he considered outstanding at whatever position he plays. Bubba, do you know who I'm talking about?
I do know what you're referencing, but I don't recall 100% either. Okay. I want to say it's an offensive skill player, but I don't recall for sure whether, you know, it's a running back, receiver, or whatever. But
okay.
Now, who was it that beat them in that Myrtle Beach Bowl?
Tulsa.
Yeah, I just remember
Bubba. On my end, anyway, Bubba's inaudible right now.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you now.
All right, good. Like Coach Houston was saying yesterday, they closed the regular season with 5 straight wins, something like that. But
I remember watching that Myrtle.
Remember about seeing that match up with Tulsa and thinking, hey, I like Tulsa to probably win this game by a couple score.
Yeah, and their schedule was kind of easy the second half of the year, you know. But still, dangerous football team. Brandon, they got a very tough schedule, too. You talk about tough schedules. If you look at Old Dominion's schedule for this coming season, their schedule is very tough. They got, I think, UVA and Virginia Tech, plus East Carolina, plus a very tough Sun Belt schedule with Marshall, App State, Coastal, all in their division. So, plus JMU, also in their division, which is, you know, a tough opponent. So,
go ahead, Dave.
Dave's muted.
All right, Dave. I think you're still on mute. I don't know if you're having technical difficulties there. But right now, we'll go ahead and bring in Matthew Semenza, former Pirate linebacker.
I just hope you guys are doing well.
What's up, Matt?
Doing well, guys. And I haven't had a chance to listen to the show yet, so I guess I'll just jump in whatever you guys are talking about.
Just talking about next year's schedule, kind of the dynamic. We've talked about the indoor practice facility, et cetera. And now we were just kind of a little bit talking about the dynamic of opening up with a top 10 NC State team and then having a pesky good Old Dominion team that's coming off of a bowl game the week after you play a top 10 NC State, and how that could be a dangerous situation if we pull off the upset against NC State. And if we lose to NC State, will we be focused on ODU, and how Bubba and I wish Campbell was that week instead of Old Dominion.
Gotcha. Well, it's you got to love the way the schedule's set up with the first month at home. If you could take care of business that first week, you know, you're really in a good spot for the rest of the season. So, I just want to see how we it seems like we've started a little slow in previous years. Hopefully this year we can come out of the gate fast and be ready for the opener.
Well, we don't have the luxury of starting slow, even if we lose to NC State. I mean, you got to keep in mind, they're going to be preseason top 10s. So everybody needs to keep that in mind. That'd be, if it was anybody else that was preseason top 10, we'd be talking about, can we pull off the upset? Whereas our fan base, because it's NC State, is going to expect to win this football game. And that's fine. But people just need to keep it in mind. If we go lose by a couple touchdowns, you know, that's a team that could potentially be playing for the ACC title. So we need to keep that in mind. But you're right. we do need to play well early, because even after NC State, you got a good old Dominion. Campbell is an up and coming FCS. You got Navy coming to town. So it's God knows, Matt, you said you'd rather play Alabama than Navy. So those first four games at home, yeah, we really need to be 3-1 in the month of September. 4-0 would be even better. But we really need to be 3-1 if we want to get to where we want to be this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And that remains true, Kyle. I would rather play Alabama than Navy. So good memory on that one.
Yeah, Navy's always a pain in the ass, of course. I mean, the way this one ended this past year with the field goal, you take that 100 times, take it every time. But, you know, Navy's always a thorn in our side. And no matter how good we are and how bad they are, like this year, on paper, we were the much better team. It's just you and me, Matt. But on paper, we were the much better team than Navy. And they gave us all we wanted and then some.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, you know, it seemed like we just needed to get over the hump with them. And it was almost like in that second half, especially in that fourth quarter, it was just self-inflicted wounds that kind of got them back into that game and you know, put them ahead. Hopefully now that we've been able to beat them, especially in Annapolis, maybe we're over the hump and, you know, we can kind of move forward from that. Because let's face it, they've owned us over the years for the most part, right up until last year. So hopefully that's a thing of the past.
Well, in 2011, we beat them in a similar situation in Annapolis, and they came back in 2012 and blew us out again in Greenville. So let's hope that didn't happen this year. I think our defense is probably a little better than it was in 2012.
Yeah, guys, I think that's and we could make an argument that with the COVID year that with Garcia, if Holton had started, we would have had a chance to win that game. That's so frustrating.
Yeah, it could be two in a row over Navy. It really could.
Yeah, but, you know, you still have to, you know, it is what it is. We couldn't play Holton, unfortunately, in 2020. But the good news is we got another year with him. I think we're going to be in better shape. And you notice I asked a question for those of you who haven't listened. You need to listen to the Mike Houston interview we did yesterday with him. And I knew Kyle was saying to me, probably screaming, saying, please ask about if CJ's coming back. So I knew to ask that question for you, Kyle.
Yeah, I didn't. You know, my impression of his answer, I don't, you know, he said something interesting, which you could take two ways. Earlier, he said, don't be surprised if we don't add another wide receiver. I don't know if he said before summer or during the summer, but Dave, you did the interview. But he said we, you know, could be adding another wide receiver. And I was curious if he meant from the transfer portal or C.J. Johnson, or if it was going to be one or the other.
Well, my impression of it was he didn't sound overly optimistic, in my opinion.
I didn't. When you asked specifically about C.J., I agree. But did you catch that part where he said we were going to add another receiver?
I did hear him say that, and, you know, I wasn't sure. I think it's going to be really hard to add another impact receiver this late in the game. But certainly I think if we're looking to go down that road, that would be a pretty good indication that things probably aren't going to work out with CJ. Just my opinion.
Well, yeah, more people enter the transfer portal before May 1st. That's how it always happens. I'm quite sure that there is some receivers out there, particularly maybe – from the FCS ranks that have had plenty of playing time. So I got a feeling if CJ's not coming back, we're adding somebody. I hope CJ makes it back. I really do. I'm rooting for CJ. We'll see. I would think if he isn't reinstated by, I would think sometime by, wouldn't you guys say if he's not reinstated by June, he's probably not coming back? By the time the end of the, you know, summer workouts.
I would think so. I mean, you know, that's summer workouts are a time where there's going to be a lot of 7-on-7 going on, lifting weights, getting in shape. So I would think if he's not back by then, it's starting to get a little late in the game. to really make an impact for next season.
Yeah, and he didn't. Go ahead.
I was just going to quickly say that with him, I would have thought that he'd already be back by now. And I think that one of the things that Coach said,
he hadn't done everything yet.
He hasn't done what he needed to do. And my memory serves me right, help me out, guys. He's about halfway there, is what Coach said. He's not really close like we thought. In other words, you would think that if he had not made it by this point, he'd be daggone close. But it sounds like that if it's 100%, you're going from 1 to 100 on a scale, he's probably at 50, like halfway.
Well, if there's some academic stuff, I don't know if there's any of that. Maybe he's got to sign up for some summer classes because he didn't quite get it done with his grades in the fall. Maybe summer workouts is not the time. Maybe there's still some things that need to be proved academically. I don't know what all he needed to do. I don't know. We know what the rumors were. I don't know if he needs to pass some tests.
Yeah.
I don't know. I do still find it curious. And I know a lot of it was his grandmother or his mom said, told him, you either do it here, or you ain't gonna do it anywhere. I wouldn't let him transfer. But at the same time, he's a grown man. He's over 18. If you want to transfer, he can transfer. The fact that he didn't enter the portal, would lead me to believe, hopefully, that he'll make it back on the team. If not, then, I don't know. I feel bad for him. You would think his relationship with Holton could kind of help, and I don't know what he's done. I know he's got a short temper. I know he's apparently late to practice. I know there was some supposed incidents with weed. Everything to me is forgivable. I guess it's a cumulative effect. I guess it's right. just so many little things add up to one big problem.
Matt, one of the things I wanted you to talk about, being a former player and God knows with Logan, and then you have Coach Connors. But for me, what it sounds like with Coach, and we've heard this before behind the scenes, and obviously we like CJ and we do a show about the Pirates. We're not one of these shock jock kind of shows, but it just seems like with CJ, what it amounts to, it's say the term tough love is very an understatement. But as Coach said, you're not bigger than the team. One player is not going to dictate. He's doing a lot of, like Kyle's talked about before, this isn't a case where he's committing crimes and doing a lot of bad stuff. It's a lot of childish stuff, a lot of team rules where he's not showing up. But, Matt, going to you, I want to pitch this to you. For me and Kyle, it doesn't seem like a big deal on some things, but if you're showing up late for practice and you have a Matt Semenza and Jeff Carr and a lot of guys that are showing up early, and you got this dude like coming in a Corvette showing up late, 10, 15 minutes late every single practice for 2 or 3 years. And you're like, wait a minute, if this guy's showing up in his car late, why do I have to come? You tell me, Coach, to be 10 minutes early, it means it's on time.
Yeah. I mean, I can just tell you straight up, if I was a teammate, if I had a teammate that was showing up late, and it's no different in corporate America, guys. When I have sales meetings and, certain people occasionally show up late. I mean, I'll be very honest. It would piss me off. You would easily lose respect for a teammate that kind of puts himself above the team. And again, I'm not saying that's the case. I don't know exactly what happened with CJ, but, I can only speak as just someone who really prided himself on being accountable to the team. If you're showing up every day, if you're giving 110% effort, if you're on time, if you're doing the extra work, and you have a teammate that's seems to be above that and isn't doing those things, you're going to be pissed off. You're not going to respect it. And eventually it will catch up with you. And now on the flip side to that, what I'll say is that, I'm guessing Jay is what, 20, 21 years old. God knows we've all made mistakes at that young age. And if Coach, if Mike Houston didn't love CJ or didn't care for him, he would have cut him loose a while ago. He would have said, you know what? We did everything we could for you. Good luck to you. Go into the portal. But that's not what he's done here. He's giving him an opportunity. He's showing him tough love, which I think he needs at this point.
He needed it.
Right.
And 2 years ago.
Yeah. You have to respect that. I mean, coach hasn't just, cut him loose and cut him off. I mean, he's giving him an opportunity, but it sounds like he's going to need to earn every bit of it.
No doubt. And time will tell, and probably sooner rather than later, if CJ is going to be back on the team. And I would think if you see us add yet another receiver, that would probably indicate CJ's not coming back. But then again, who knows? I don't know. I'd like to hear, I go, he didn't think we were going to add another receiver, and then Houston says we are. So I'd be interested to hear Igo's thoughts on that, and if he's got any leads on who it could be.
But don't you think that if CJ was not going to be on the team, let me just play this out. If CJ was not going to be on the team, he would have already in their transfer portal, and then we would have the other guy. I think what it is, I'll be honest with you guys. Kyle and Matt are on a team with me, right? And I'm acting up, but coach comes and says, look, you're a tight end. He says, look, you can keep all, you got to work on, coming back. And I think he wants to show CJ that, hey,
you think he's staying on his ass up until everything's done and he's dangling, hey, we'll add somebody else.
Yeah,
you don't get it back. And he's saying it publicly. Yeah, it could be that. It could very, very well be that, you know, he's going to stay on his ass until he's back. And I will say this, when he's back, he needs to be held accountable. But I don't like when somebody is let back on and just, you're back on the team and then they're at the bottom and they – if CJ goes out on the practice field in August and he's our best-looking wide receiver at that, wherever they have him at, outside or at the slot, or second best, then he needs to be on the two deep. I'm not a believer in, well, you weren't here all – well, you're back on the team now. You're part of it. And if he's out there and he looks like our second – or first best receiver, then he needs to be playing. So if he gets back on the team, hold him accountable, but don't bury him on the depth chart. That never makes any sense to me. Matt, you played. Do you agree with that or no?
No, I agree with that, Kyle. I mean, if you've worked your way back onto the team and, you're doing the things you need to do and you're competing in practice, then absolutely. I think you have to let talent see the field when you can. I think that's a totally legitimate point. And I'll tell you guys though, one thing that I have seen, and like I said, I did see this at my time at East Carolina, maybe with one or two guys that came through there, not a lot, maybe one or two in the 4 years that I was there. I've seen it in the corporate world too. If you have somebody that is doing those things, showing up late, not being accountable to the team, that can spread rapidly.
Right.
It really can. It can become a, for lack of a better term, it can become a cancer in the locker room. And, the younger guys, they see somebody getting away with it. They see somebody showing up late, doing these different things. And all of a sudden they think it's okay. So, that's where it gets dangerous. But no, I agree, Kyle. If he's done what's asked of him and he looks great in practice, then, hey, this is college football, and it's about winning games. So put your talent on the field.
No question.
Yeah, no doubt. And time will tell. We got any comments from viewers? Anybody want to chime in? Or
yeah, we had Bubba obviously chiming in that outside of telling us the box, CJ needs to check, Mike Houston has been fairly frank about the situation, saying he isn't going to let one guy bring the culture down, and he'd hope that it would be settled by now. And like we were talking about, the very fact of we're at, like, I'm just shocked that we're 50%. I thought we would be very close, or he would already be back on the team by now. But you know what? Good for Coach Houston. I had a situation, guys, obviously the high school level, and I'm coaching basketball, and I had a kid that they knew not to slam dunk the basketball and the warmups is a technical foul, right, at the time. And we had started a tournament, a national tournament with a technical foul in December. So this is January, February. We're playing a home game, and the referees knew me. I'm the one that paid them. I literally did, because I helped out the athletic director. And they said, "Coach, we're not going to do anything about it, but your player just slam dunked the ball." I said, "He's not playing tonight," and he was my best player. But I wanted to send a message to him that he couldn't mess the team up, and he was furious. He was mad. But guess what? The rest of the team saw that the best player on the team slam dunked the ball, and we could have gotten a technical for that. And I explained to the team and to him, and he understood after the fact. But you can't slam dunk the ball knowing that that's going to hurt the team, and it could have been a technical foul starting the game instead of, you know, the jump ball. So you have to – that was a situation where I didn't want to do that. I really liked the kid, but at the same time, I'd already warned them not to do it, and it, you know, what would happen if they did, and I couldn't back down on that particular situation. But we did win the game. We didn't really need him that night anyway, but at the same time, I wanted to show that he was not bigger than the program, just like that was on a smaller, much, much smaller scale compared to obviously East Carolina. But from a coaching standpoint, you just can't have, like Coach said, I mean, they've given CJ, I don't know, not we're not close to the program, meaning the day-to-day operations, but guys, they've given that guy like, I don't know how many chances over the last 3 years. And, you know, and furthermore, the freshman year, nobody knew anything about him, right? And then, Matt, you could probably test this because you're a defensive guy. When that guy burns you that bad, like how good he was the freshman year, they're going to make sure the scouting reports know what to do. And look, for CJ, all you have to do is grab his shirt and he's going to, you know, get all mad. And they may or may not call a pass interference call, but that's how you get in his head. Just grab his jersey. Hold him, do whatever you have to do, and his mind will be out of the game.
Yeah, and you know, I know we've talked about this before, but don't think for one second that opposing defensive coordinators aren't telling their DBs, listen, if you jaw at him a little bit, if you go at him, if you're physical, he's going to lose his cool. He's going to break down, might have a penalty called against him. There, that goes on during the week. There's and you could see it. I mean, teams were coming in specifically with the game plan to go after him, do a lot of talking, get him emotional, and it did lead to some penalties and some frustration. So, yeah, no doubt about it. And once that scouting report is out, it's tough to get away from it.
No question. So that's one of the things I think hopefully he can work on. He has talent to make it at the next level, even if it's like undrafted free agent or something. I mean, I think he has the skills to make the league. I'm not saying that necessarily he would be drafted based on what I've seen yet, but he's close to making it to the league, man. And why wouldn't you, when you're that close, why wouldn't you do that? Close is not enough. And but we'll see how it plays out. But certainly I'm going to give, do you guys have a prediction on how many wins this year? By the way, early, way too early predictions.
I think the schedule's tough. I think if things were to go perfect, I think 9-3. If things are a disaster, 5-7. I'll go 7-5. I think 7-5 again is particularly with 7 home games. I'll say we go 5-2 at home. And that would mean we'd only need to win 2 on the road. I'll say 7-5, but 6-6 wouldn't surprise me. 8-4 wouldn't surprise me. You know, like I said, I think at best 9-3, but I'll go 7-5.
What do you think, Mac?
I'll tell you, I would need to go through it one game at a time. I'm not there yet. How about we go through it? You guys want to go through it?
Yeah, we can do it real fast. We'll do it real fast. Yeah, we'll do it fast. All right, so we have NC State.
That's probably the toughest one for me. I can see it going either way, but I'm going to say if they're a true top 10 team, I'm going to say that's a loss.
Old Dominion.
That's a win.
Campbell.
That's a win.
Navy.
That's a win.
So that's 3-1.
See the rest of the schedule. One of you guys put a little schedule. I'm on my phone.
Okay, I got it. We got so we're going to be at South Florida October 1st.
That should be a win.
At Tulane the next week in New Orleans.
That's kind of an unpredictable game, but I'm going to say it's a win.
All right. We're going to be home against Memphis October the 15th.
I'll go loss there.
Okay.
You going loss at home against Memphis?
I think we're going to beat Memphis. That's one I really like our chances.
All right, well, we're going Matt right now. So that's Matt, right now we got 5 wins, Matt. So what's next?
Next up is home the next following week against UCF. Remember, you don't have Dylan Gabriel.
Exactly. I'm going to go win there. We should have won that game last year. We had it won. I'm going to go win.
And then brutal schedule coming up for the last 3 out of 4 games at BYU. Another big they're going to be what, Kyle? Top 15 team?
Somewhere top 15, top 20, yeah.
Yeah. And it's on the road to Provo. I mean, but not to say too much. Go ahead.
I'll say loss there.
At Cincinnati the following week. Or excuse me, no, I beg your pardon. It's the bye week. So you will have a bye, and then it'll be a Friday game at Cincinnati.
I'll say loss.
All right. Then we play home. Our last home game is November 19th against Houston.
I'll say win.
You got 11-5.
Last game of the season is at Temple.
Oh, okay. All right. So he's going to say win for that. So that'd be 8-4. Yep.
I'll go win. So, I'll go 8-4, guys.
I agree with you mostly. There's a few I would flip-flop. I think we'll beat Memphis at home. I think we'll lose to South Florida or Tulane on the road. I think we'll lose one of those two. I think both will be improved. Houston, I'm probably going to go loss. But I think if I went over the schedule just like you did, I might come out 8-4. Also, just with a few games flip-flopped. But I'm still going to say 7-5.
Hey, we'll take 7. We'll take 7-5 as long as you're not saying 3-9 or 4-8. That's fine.
No, and I think 8-4 is very doable. I just don't see, and I don't, you know, we beat Memphis at Memphis last year. I think Memphis is trending down.
Yep.
And now we get them in Greenville. And, I mean, you know, who knows? They may be great this year. I got to look and see what they got coming back. But that's one that I do think to win. I think South Florida and Tulane will both be much better, particularly South Florida. This is year 3 for that guy. And I've seen some flashes on offense. They played us really well for a half this past season. Of course, it was horrible weather on a Thursday night.
Yeah, no doubt. Guys, the schedule for me that is going to be tough at BYU, at Cincy. You have the home game against Houston. Those three, the last 3 out of 4 is really rough as far as our conference schedule.
So, yeah, then we got Temple on the road Thanksgiving weekend.
Yep.
Yeah, that's, I don't like Saturday. That from a weather standpoint at all. Yep. Rather that be in Greenville, Temple was god awful this past year. They were as bad of an American Conference team as I've seen outside of us in the Scotty Montgomery era. It would be East Carolina Scotty Montgomery era, UCF 2015, and that Temple team this year. First worst American Conference teams I've seen.
I agree. I think they're still going to be bad. I think there's a whole bunch of guys. Help me, guys. Matt, you're up that way. A little bit, obviously, north in Philly. But Kyle, help me out. There was a lot of guys that transferred off of that Temple team, correct?
Well, that was last year. They transferred going into this season. I don't know how the transfers have been. I don't even know who their new head coach is.
I can't remember.
I can't recall. I was just about to ask you guys that. I cannot recall.
I do know if I do really believe. Help me out, guys. The former head coach Mississippi State, offensive coordinator Oregon, offensive coordinator Penn State.
Oh yeah,
took the head coaching job at Akron. I believe if he'd have just waited about another week, he'd have got that Temple job. He wanted to get back close home. He's from Western PA. So he took the Akron job, and he was the OC there under J.D. Brookhart back when they won a MAC championship. So he was familiar with Akron. But you have to wonder if he would have gotten the Temple job had he just waited out. What is his name? His name is escaping me.
That's right. Joe Moorhead, Kyle. Is that Moorhead?
Yeah, Moorhead. Yes, Moorhead. Yes.
Oh well.
I'm glad, but I'm from a competitive standpoint, I'm kind of glad Temple didn't get him.
There you go.
He's an outstanding coach. He really is. He did a great job at Penn State. And, you know, he's a solid coach. So I agree. Better off having him in the MAC. Let me ask you guys a question. Do you feel like, you know, considering it's year four, everything seems to be sort of building up to this year for the program and for Mike Houston. We're finally in a position, you know, we have a senior quarterback, we have depth on the offensive line, we have a solid defense. Do you feel like anything less than 8 wins would be a little disappointing?
Well, that was
It depends, Matt. I think 7-5. I think 7-5, and then you go win a bowl game, that gives you 8. I think 7-6 would be disappointing. I think 7-5 plus a bowl to win 8 would be fine. I think we've been bad for so long, and it's a very tough schedule. So, no, I think anything less than 7 in the regular season would be highly disappointing. I won't go so far as to say 8, though. You'd like to think year 4 we could get to 8 wins. I think there's enough there. I really believe if we had Snead and CJ, you know, though I like some of the pieces we brought in at receiver. What's his name? What's the corner that declared for the draft that didn't get drafted?
Jaquan McMillan.
Yeah, McMillan. I think he made a mistake. I know he signed a free agent deal, but I really believe had he came back another year, he would have been a mid-round draft pick.
I was thinking about that, guys, with obviously watching the first round. I knew he was. I'm not saying I thought he was.
No, I think had,
I thought he was
had Jaquan came back and built on last year, I think he could have been like a 5th-round draft pick easily.
Yeah, the thing for me is that I know that you have to know about your draft stock, but certainly, man, when you declare like that, and I wish him well.
He got bad advice.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think he was. You're exactly right, guys. And I tell you what, you never know with the way that the season could go. You were talking about 8-4. That's what I had thought. And you know, there's a chance. It all comes down to, you guys are right. It comes down to that first month of how we play. But if you get off on, say, if we do 3-1,
I don't know if it comes down to that necessarily, Dave. To get to 8-4. Last year we started off 0-2, and we're staring 0-3 in the face, and we finished 7-5. So, you know, let's say we go 2-2 to start September, but then we get hot in November, and you know, instead of upsetting NC State, we upset BYU. So, you never know, but it sure would make things easier to at least go 3-1 in September.
No, you definitely have to have that many wins. But what I was talking about is, it's been a long time since we've had a chance, even a fighting chance, to talk about a championship in the, as far as a conference championship.
Oh yeah.
Look, I'm not saying we will. Let me make it very clear for folks. I'm not saying we're going to win a conference championship. What I'm saying is that we'll be in the mix where we have.
Oh, it's entirely possible, because all you got to do is finish second. You don't even have to win a division the way things are set up. You know, you go back to division play next year, most likely. So, yeah, let's say we finish second in the league. Let's say, I don't know. Cincinnati graduated everybody and their mama, but let's say Cincinnati or UCF finishes first and we finish second. Then, you know, we're playing for a conference championship.
Right.
Houston's going to be in that mix too. So, I think when the magazines come out, when you're Phil Steele and your Athlon, your Lindy's, I think we'll be picked. I think we'll be picked anywhere between 4th and 6th in the conference, maybe as high as 3rd. But you know, you're going to have Cincinnati, you're going to have UCF, Houston. You know, SMU will be in that mix. But after that, you know, we're definitely going to be in the conversation. Not Temple, not South Florida. Not Tulsa, not Navy. It'll be us. I think we definitely have a shot to compete for the championship this year.
And guess what? Next year, we have a real good chance to make the conference championship.
Well, next year the conference changes, and we'll be breaking in a new quarterback. We'll have a lot of other pieces back, and hopefully Mike Houston will still be here. And we'll get to start our rivalry with Charlotte, which I know Matt's fired up about.
I'm worried about the conference championship that year specifically because of Charlotte. I don't know if we're going to be able to match up with them. Being very sarcastic here, guys. And to all the listeners, that is a joke.
People listening right now thought you were serious.
No, very sarcastic. I despise the fact that Charlotte is in a conference with us. I'm very open about it. They have not earned their right to get to this level of Division I football. They're only here because they're in a large market. So if there's any Charlotte fans out there listening to the show, you're lucky, very lucky to be where you are and to be in a conference with East Carolina. That's all I'll say about it. I just don't like it. But what are you going to do? You can't change it. It is what it is.
I think you probably can, and I think you probably will over time. I think when the money dries up, and it's going to, I think we're going to be Sun Belt bound. Unfortunately, it'd be better to go to the Big 12. But if the money ends up all equal, and I think it is, I'd much rather be playing Appalachian State and Marshall than anybody in the American going forward.
Well, it all comes down to our leadership, and it all comes down to raising money. And like we're talking about NIL deals, we're talking about indoor practice facility. We're talking about, we'll get ready to wrap things up, but can we have people, and I love them in the Pirate Club, but let's be objective. Spence, we're the sports objective. Can we be objective here? We've got to raise some money. Don't tell me, I'm sick and tired of hearing people talk about how we don't have money. And Matt, we were talking about this before you jumped in and you were on the way home. We've never had money. It's not like we had money and we don't have it anymore. We've never had it. But you got to put it out there. You got to put your ideas out there of what you're doing. And so I'm hoping that we have the indoor practice facility. Stop making excuses. You guys built the $500 million, not really, but the $60, $70 million press box that was way too much. We spent way too much money on that. So we have to deal with that, but we can't get further and further behind because if not, we won't even, we're going to be lucky to be group of five.
Yeah. Wow. Now there was I don't know if you guys talked about this, but it was mentioned on one of the boards that there was already a significant amount of money that's been raised. I'm not sure if that's.
Yeah, it was on HTC.
Okay. So it was on HCC, and I know somebody mentioned it was somewhere in the neighborhood of like $12 to $15 million
pledged and raised, just two different things. Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. That's a good point. That's a very good point.
We need cash card commitment, guys.
So, and as Mike Houston said last night, it's going to be at least $20 million. It's going to be at least a $20 million project. So,
and guys, at the rate we're going, it'll be $35 million because they take too long. These things don't happen overnight, and I don't understand, guys. Both of you are very ambitious, ballsy guys, right? It frustrates the daylights.
Well, Dave, if we wait for the housing market to crash and nobody's building new houses, we might get it cheaper.
Maybe
that's coming. That's coming.
But that's true. It is coming. But the very fact of what, I want to ask you guys, what are we waiting for? I don't understand why we're waiting. Put it out there. If you don't, it's like if you don't ask a girl out, then she's not going to go out with you. Why aren't we asking for people for money? And why are we so scared? Are you scared that you're not going to be able to raise the money? Go ahead and put it out there. Go ahead and put it out there that we want an indoor. Everybody want. And that's the thing. It's not like a few of us on this show, they're talking about indoor practice facility. Everybody agrees with it. So go ahead, and you already have renderings, as Coach talked about. We've known about that for a while. And they told me it was going to be January, guys, that we're going to do this. They told me it was going to be March. I mean, they keep telling me that they're going to announce this. Like every month or so, I call them and the Pirate Club, and we talk to our sources behind the scenes. oh, David's coming soon. Well, my God, it's already May and you still haven't done anything. So it just it's frustrating that we get further and further behind and we pay people that are supposed to be our leaders. It's supposed to, we have a great chancellor now. Come on, chancellor. We love you. Why don't you put pressure on these guys in the athletic department to get this stuff done? Guys, we're raising hundreds of millions of dollars academically. Why can't we do that athletically? Please tell me why. Sorry.
Yeah, we can. It's just going to take the right leadership and the right approach. And hopefully it'll happen soon.
No doubt, guys. Do you have anything before we go? I'm going to go to bed here in a second. I'm exhausted. I'm sorry. I'm not like Matt Semenza. Kyle actually probably will stay up to midnight anyway, but got up at about 5 a.m. this morning. I don't know what time you guys get up, but I got up a little bit early. But thank you for Wayne Euless, by the way. Kyle, you're coming to the show. Matt has a good – he's in Connecticut. He has a good excuse.
I doubt I'll be there, Dave. I got a lot going on right now. Thoughts and prayers, guys, without getting into it. Keep just Pirate Nation. Keep me your thoughts and prayers, and okay. I'll leave it there. And that's all I got. Go Pirates.
All right. What about you, brother Matt? Are you going to get on the plane? I'll pick you up in Greenville, and then you come to the show?
I would love to see it, and this is one of the reasons why I wish I lived a little closer so I could go to these things. But if I was around, I would certainly try to get to see it. But
we understand, dude.
Yeah, it's a little far out of range. But Kyle, wishing you the best.
Yeah,
we're all pulling for you. So not to get into details, but we're pulling for you, and. You know, I guess the one other thing I wanted to say was just, you know, going through that schedule, even though, you know, we talked about maybe a loss NC State, maybe a loss BYU, every one of those games is winnable. So on the optimistic side, there's not a game you look at and say, all right, we can't win this game. They're all winnable games, which is a good position to be in. So you're going to see a lot of 50-50 type games where it could come down to a turnover or, you know, a big play, but we should be in every game next year with a chance to win. So I'll just leave it at that.
And speaking of games, we talked about Memphis. Well, the Pirates on the baseball diamond are on the road. They're going to be this weekend. Good luck to them as they're taking on the Tigers there. We feel like they should win 2 out of 3. Maybe, hey, they might be able to get a sweep, but good luck to them as the Pirates will be coming home for that big homestand. That's going to be great to end out the season. So good luck to Cliff Godwin and company. Guys, this weekend, we'll see how they do. And, of course, we have extra innings, and that's brought to you by Next Level Training Center in Greenville. Goodbye, Sarah, our good friends Trent Britt and Gaynell Britt. They do a great job with that. All right, for our good friend Bubba Rosenbaum, appreciate you, buddy, for producing tonight. And also, we want to thank our great guest tonight, Wayne Euless. We had the big show in Robertsonville on Saturday night. Thanks, guys, to Matt and Kyle. Until next time. You've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. From the sidelines down to the post. Put it down like not even close. All out to the last whistle blow. From the flag with the soul and cross bones. Everybody stand up, get your hands up. Let a team know that we got their back. This is our house, this is our town, our time. Everyone,